Welcome to Candid Catholic Convos, a program brought to you by the Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg. Our mission is to humanize the Church and help you to grow in your faith, love, and understanding. I'm your host, Rachel Trochet, a cradle Catholic who's only human and struggled with faith on more than one occasion. Each week, you'll hear engaging, down-to-earth interviews and actionable strategies you can implement into your life with ease to help you grow closer to God. If you're ready to open your heart and step fully into the person God created you to be, then you're in the right place. Let's get started.
He is risen. He is risen indeed. Good morning and a very, very happy Easter from the offices of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg. I'm Michael Parks, and it's a pleasure once again to be with our good friend, the shepherd of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg, the Most Reverend Ronald W. Gaynor, in the studios with us for our annual Easter message. We have a tradition of speaking every Easter and Christmas, and I always look forward to our conversations. So welcome back, Bishop. Good pleasure to see you.
Michael, it's wonderful to be with you. I'm grateful to have this opportunity once again, and it's a joy to have our conversation this morning.
Well, first of all, a belated thanks to you from all of the Irish people of Harrisburg and also the non-Irish people like me who enjoy a good corned beef meal. And as a lot of you were aware, on St. Patrick's Day fell on a Friday during Lent this year, and on the diocese, and it's you heard through the news and everything that the bishop granted us, what do you call it? Is it a dispensation?
A dispensation, yeah. from abstinence. Yeah, we're during Lent on Fridays, we're not to eat meat, but I'm like you, not Irish, but we certainly needed to do that because, first of all, St. Patrick is the patron of our diocese. And he is the patron of our cathedral. So for us, it's a large feast, even though it's in Lent. And it was the appropriate thing to do to allow us to celebrate the great saint of Ireland with festive meals and corned beef and cabbage, if you wish. Yeah.
Yes. Well, not to, getting on to the most important thing of the day. This is Easter weekend and Easter Sunday. Put into perspective, the Easter holiday, what it means to us as Christians. It's the most sacred holiday of the year.
It certainly is. A lot of us would say, well, Christmas is my favorite, and it has a lot of nostalgia and emotion connect with it. But Easter is the feast of feasts, and the Saturday evening, ushering us into Easter Sunday. That liturgy is called the mother of all liturgies because we're celebrating the very essence, the core of the Christian's faith, and that is the death and resurrection of Christ. As St. Paul says, if Christ did not rise from the dead, then we are all fools. The most pitiable of all men. So it is the heart, it is the core, the center of the Christian faith at Easter time, the high point of our liturgical and spiritual life.
We'll get into the Easter holiday a little bit later in the program. But as we normally do, as we gather for these conversations and sit down with the bishop, we always like to reach back and find out what has been happening since the last time we sat down and spoke. I know there are a lot of positives happening in the diocese that I've been following on the website, hbgdiocese.org. But I think one of the major news stories which happened back in February is that the diocese concluded its bankruptcy.
That is right, Michael. We did. Thank the Lord. On February the 15th, actually, some of our staff, myself included, attended a confirmation hearing at the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Middle District of Pennsylvania. And during that hearing, our plan of reorganization was finally confirmed. So that hearing was actually held almost exactly 3 years from the date that we first filed for reorganization. So through the plan of reorganization that has been now approved, the diocese and the ad hoc committee, that's our parishes and other non-debtor related entities, our schools and Pennsylvania Catholic Conference, our Catholic Charities, will contribute $7.5 million to the trust fund. The settling insurers will contribute an additional $10.75 million, bringing the total trust amount to $18.25 million. So this trust that is now established and funded will provide financial restitution for survivors of clergy sexual abuse. Also included in the plan are enhancements to our own diocesan youth protection efforts. And all of these details can actually be found, if anyone likes to look at, take a deeper dive into those, on our diocesan website. Certainly the past 3 years have been a challenging time for our Harrisburg diocese. And the reorganization process was also challenging for our clergy, our laity, our Catholic schools, and most especially, though, for the survivors of clergy abuse. I want to take just a moment to express my gratitude and appreciation to the survivors who participated directly in the reorganization process. That difficult and brave work that they completed was essential in this process for us to arrive at a consensual resolution. I certainly pray the trust that has been established will provide some level of restitution for the survivors, but I acknowledge that no amount of money will ever make reparation for the abuse that they endured. I and our diocese are committed to not just addressing the horrors of clergy abuse, but also to walk with our survivors so that they know that the church cares for them. Our foremost concern is that their emotional and spiritual welfare, and we will continue to offer survivors immediate, loving, and compassionate care. I'll never be able to adequately express my deep sorrow for the pain these survivors have experienced. All I can say is how profoundly sorry I am, and I pray that our actions will demonstrate clearly our commitment to supporting survivors in their path to healing and taking every precaution to prevent this tragedy in the future. Michael, I also want to take this opportunity to publicly thank our clergy, our priests and deacons. They were really on the forefront of the lines in responding to the parishioners' questions and even questions from the general public. And I just want to say thank you to them for persevering through this difficult time.
Well, and I just would like to, you know, and I speak for a lot of the parishioners and the members of the diocese who want to thank you for, you know, being, as we always mentioned, you were the shepherd for the flock here in central Pennsylvania in this diocese. And I think we do know what a horrible time and a tough time it has been. And it's nice that, you know, you always mention it's, you know, while you are the shepherd and the leader, there are so many other people who make up this effort and, you know, work together on this to bring it to a, you know, hopefully a fruitful
exactly
ending.
It certainly was a cooperative effort to bring us to this consensual resolution and this, I would say, happy ending.
Well, with the reorganization concluded, we always like, you know, it's that's in the past somewhat, but still there's work to be done. But it's always nice to look to the future. So what does the future look like for the Diocese of Harrisburg through your eyes?
From where I sit, Michael, the future of the diocese looks really bright. When we started this process, I said our goals were to stabilize our financial situation in the diocese and provide just and fair compensation to survivors of clergy abuse while continuing to maintain our charitable, spiritual, and educational ministries. So now that our diocese has emerged from bankruptcy, I believe we have reached, or certainly we're in the process of reaching, these very goals. The diocese is really starting a new chapter. Our Catholic schools continue to do very well with enrollment and academic achievement. We're also seeing growth in our ministries, specifically through our Secretariat of Catholic Life and Evangelization. This office is really at the heart of our ministry programs in the diocese. We have almost an entirely new team of people in that office, some of which joined us at the beginning of this calendar year. The work they are already accomplishing is impressive, and I'm excited to see where they're going to take our ministries in the future. For some examples, for instance, very recently we held a workshop with our Catholic Leadership Institute to introduce our pastors to what is called the Next Generation Parish. Through this process, our parishes would have a team of experts working with them to identify long-term goals for the parish and their ministries. That team would then help with the implementation of those established goals. Ultimately, the goal of this work is to reinvigorate our parishes and also make sure that we're meeting the spiritual needs of our faithful. We're starting with only 6 parishes, but our hope is that we'll be able to maintain a similar support for all the parishes in the diocese. We're also focusing more intentionally on our young adult ministries here in the diocese. At last count, we had 15 young adult groups. And when I say young adult, I mean from age 18 to under 40. So our Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministries works with these groups as a support function and also to provide guidance. This year, we're hosting a young adult retreat again. That will be over Memorial Day weekend, and the retreat will give our young adults a chance to get away from work and the stresses of the world and to refocus on Christ and on his mission and the mission of the church, and also to have great camaraderie with other young adult Catholics. We have information on our website for that event, and I certainly encourage any young adult Catholics who may be thinking of going to review the information online on our diocesan website. Another young adult-related ministry we're hoping to start in our diocese is called Young Catholic Professionals. This organization is focused on supporting young adults and helping them live their faith in the workplace to balance work and faith and also provide professional development opportunities. We're still trying to bring this opportunity to our diocese, and if any young adults or seasoned Catholic professionals are interested in being part of the steering committee, please contact our youth and young adult office for more information. One more example I'd like to mention, Michael, is regarding our renewed focus on ministry to our culturally diverse populations. Deacon Armando Torres, who joined us in January, is leading our efforts to provide ministry opportunities and faith enrichment to our Hispanic, Vietnamese, and Black communities. This area of ministry unfortunately suffered during the COVID pandemic. But with Deacon Torres joining our staff, I'm excited for the possibilities, and I'm looking forward to seeing what ministry opportunities will be developing. These examples are really just the beginning of our diocese moving forward, and I think we have a very bright future ahead of us.
And definitely, you realize the age of the church itself, hundreds if not thousands of years. And, you know, things have changed, and we've got to adapt to a new group and a new system, and especially when it comes to our youth. And so many of these sound, you know, just incredible because, you know, once again, a lot of our older parishioners are older like us, and we're losing them, and we'll have a new generation of children being part of the Catholic faith, and to make it as exciting and fun and rewarding as it has been for us older members of the church. So this is just some great news. You know, we talk about the youth, and I heard you mention this, the Catholic schools. The last time we spoke before Christmas, the Catholic schools in the diocese were experiencing incredible growth. Now that we're nearing the end of the school year for 2022-2023, has that growth continued?
It certainly has, Michael, and I'm really pleased. For that growth has been in our school over the past 2 years. Just a little background, from the fall of 2020 to the fall of 2021, enrollment in our 35 schools increased by 6%. And increased nearly another 1% from the fall of 2021 to the fall of 2022. Also, at the beginning of this current school year, we received the assessment or the testing results for our Catholic schools. You may remember seeing news stories about the learning loss that was experienced throughout the public school systems over the past several years. In our schools, we actually experienced the opposite. On average, 72% of our diocesan school students measured at or above proficiency in reading, 20 points above their Pennsylvania public school counterparts. In math, 77% of our diocesan students measured at or above proficiency, 19 points better than our state public schools. So nationally, our diocesan Catholic schools were leading public schools by 16%. In math proficiency and 18% in reading proficiency. You can see that our diocesan schools are even above that national Catholic school average. I will add, Michael, that before the COVID pandemic, our schools had a strong academic record. because of the quick transition our teachers and principals were able to make, we saw very little interruption to our learning environments, other than being fully remote for a rather short time. Hmm. I can also share that the testing results we saw from our students in the winter, this past winter, were again very good. And these scores indicate we'll see strong academic growth when the spring testing occurs. So our schools are also in the middle of enrollment time right now, and many of our schools are accepting new students for the next school year. With the success of our schools, I would certainly encourage parents to check out their local Catholic school to see what we might have to offer for their children.
And please do. You know, the schools themselves have a number of events throughout the year to welcome parents and students in to tour the schools, but you can also set something up and learn more about Catholic schools and the Catholic education by going to the local website for the diocese, which is hbgdiocese.org. You know, Bishop, I'm so glad and the years that we have sat down and spoke, that was like always been a focus of yours, but also an enjoyment as part of your job as bishop is to spend time with the youth in the diocese. That's always been something important to you. And it just breaks our hearts sometimes as older people. And sometimes with all the things that are going on in the world, we kind of place the blame on the youth and it's a different generation and they just don't understand the way we do and responsibility and parenting and things like that. But when you meet with some of these students, especially in the Catholic schools, does it give you hope?
It does. It absolutely does. And I do have a lot of opportunities to be with our elementary school children. I just love visiting our classrooms, and I try to do that whenever I can. You just never know. I love to go through each classroom and have the children ask me questions. You have no clue what direction these questions will come from. Everything to my favorite color to was there ever a woman in my life. so it's a great opportunity. And then I meet with this is a heavy confirmation season from now until June, and I meet an hour before the Mass for confirmation with the candidates, and I spend that time allowing them to ask me questions as well, and I quiz them too on the sacrament of confirmation. And we just completed last week the visit to the six high schools in the diocese, and I'm talking directly to the seniors there about the transition from high school to college life, and that their faith has to travel with them and not leave it back home or back at their school. So these are wonderful opportunities to be with the students in the diocese, young people, and it is encouraging to see their hopes, their optimism, and their desire, really, especially among the confirmation candidates, to grow in the faith.
Yeah, and I just thoroughly agree from the students and the people that I've run across in my life and my career, you know, the kind of education that is provided by the Catholic diocese and the Catholic schools. It does mold and create some wonderful young men and women who are successful. But Bishop, don't you agree with me? It was like with the things that are going on in the world, you know, we hear of like all the incidences and the school shootings and things like that. Doesn't it come back to somehow our loss of faith and also family?
It is. I think so, very much so, Michael. And, you know, it's troubling polls about how just comparing polls back in, I think it was just in the Wall Street Journal, 1998 to a recent poll about the importance of religion and a serious decline. It was something like 60-some% said religion was very important in their lives. It's down to 37% now in the most recent poll on U.S. citizens. The farther we drift from God, the farther we drift from our own identities. You know, we are His creatures, and no secret that when we look at the world, it's not the way God meant it to be. And we look at the human person, the way our society is not the way God meant it to be. So a return to God, well, I think, is the solution, a return to practicing our faith. And I'm not simply talking about Catholic faith. I certainly would invite everyone to consider the Catholic Church. But if you've drifted from whatever faith tradition you may have been raised in, to return to that, the closer we get to God, the closer we get to each other, and the closer we get to being the kind of person that God created us to be.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because there's so many people who are some of our listeners right now may not be of the Catholic faith, but you know, the churches in our community, the religious people in our community, and what goes on every Sunday during worship and throughout the week, and the good parents who you know, strengthen the importance of faith and family, and you know, responsible parenting is so important. We do practice that so much, but there's so much, like you mentioned, a lack of that. And I think, you know, what you said, you know, it's, we getting back to God is so important, and I think that could really help solve many of the issues that we're facing.
Sure.
Well, as we're approaching Easter season, we're finishing up the Easter season. We're nearing the end of Holy Week, which is the holiest time of the year for the Catholic Church and for Christians. Can you briefly explain, you know, why this week is so important?
Surely. Well, it is the week in which liturgically and spiritually we draw close to those very mysteries by which Jesus accomplished our salvation. So Holy Week for us begins with Palm Sunday, last Sunday, where we recall his triumphant entry into the city of Jerusalem. And I like to say that that liturgy has kind of liturgical whiplash, because we begin holding palms and crying out, as the crowds did, Hosanna to the Son of David, you know, glory to the Son of David. And then in a very brief time, we hear the Passion. This year it'll be from St. Matthew's Gospel. And it was from St. Matthew's Gospel, and we say, crucify him, crucify him. That tremendous whiplash, that shift from praising the Lord to condemning him to death. And so we begin to the week with the recalling his passion, and then we move into what is truly the most sacred 3 days. We call it the Easter or Paschal Triduum, which is Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday. And Holy Thursday, we have the evening mass of the Lord's Supper, commemorating what our Lord did with his apostles in the upper room the night before he died, when he instituted both the priesthood and the gift of the Holy Eucharist. This is my body, this is my blood. And in addition, we reenact in the liturgy, we have a liturgical ritual in which the celebrant removes the shoes, removes the outer garment for the liturgy, the chasuble, and washes the feet of some parishioners, a group of parishioners, in commemoration of the humble service that Jesus showed to his friends at the Last Supper by washing their feet, and a reminder to all of us that if we're going to follow Christ, then humility is a virtue that we all need to foster in our lives in relationship to one another. Good Friday, of course, is the commemoration of the crucifixion of Jesus and his death on the cross, and so the cross features prominently, the unveiling of that cross and the veneration of the cross by the faithful who come to that liturgy. Good Friday, we don't have Mass, actually, in deference to the death of Jesus. We do give out Holy Communion that has been consecrated the evening before at the Mass of the Lord's Supper, but there's no Mass actually celebrated on Good Friday. And then what's called the mother of all liturgies, or the liturgy of liturgies, is the Easter Vigil at sunset on a Saturday evening, where the church is in darkness. We bring the Easter candle in after having blessed a fire outside the church, and that light of the candle pierces the darkness, just as the glory of Christ's resurrection conquers the darkness of sin and death. And then we have a long scripture reading, a long liturgy of the word with seven passages from the Old Testament, reading from the book of the letter of St. Paul to the Romans, and then the gospel of the resurrection. And then we celebrate baptism, which the whole season of Lent has been preparing us to renew our baptismal promises and to be sprinkled with that holy Easter water as a reminder of our baptism. And then we have the liturgy of the Eucharist. And then, of course, we have Easter Sunday, which opens up to a 50-day season of celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. So indeed, this truly is the holiest time of our year, when we celebrate those mysteries which are essential to the salvation of humanity.
One of the things a lot of people, well, most of us who have been to Mass and to Easter Masses during the week, well, as Catholics, we always notice that this is the time of year when we welcome new members to join the church during this week. Does that continue? Do you get a lot of people joining?
Absolutely. On the first Sunday of Lent, we have at our cathedral a liturgy that's only celebrated once a year. It's called the Rite of Election, and we invite those who are preparing for the three sacraments of initiation, baptism, confirmation, and Holy Eucharist, to come to the cathedral. And there we have a special ritual. It's not Mass, but it's called the Rite of Election. So first of all, the people are sent, the rite of sending, from their parishes that morning, and then we assemble on Sunday afternoon on the first Sunday of Lent. And they're up to that point, they're called catechumens. They're learning about the faith. They're receiving catechesis. But in that ceremony, they become the elect. In other words, the chosen. They are now selected to receive the Easter sacraments, the full Christian initiation at the Easter Vigil. After they're sent from their parish, then they come to me at the cathedral, having been prepared, and then I receive them, making them members of, as I say, the elect. There are a few additional steps then that will take place during Lent in the parish. They receive the Lord's Prayer, for instance, the prayer that Jesus had taught us. They're given the creed, and they learn the profession of faith. And then on Holy Saturday at the Easter Vigil, these individuals will be baptized, confirmed, and make their first Holy Communion. They will become then full members of the church in complete union with the body of Christ. Not all those joining the church will receive all the sacraments. For instance, we also had 27 people there at the cathedral who have already been baptized in another Christian denomination, so we would not baptize them again. We respect, honor the baptism of all the Christian churches. So, but these people, perhaps at the Easter Vigil or sometime during the Easter season, will be confirmed and make their first Holy Communion. They'll become one with us at the altar of the Lord. So seeing these new members come into full communion with the church and those who are coming through all the initiation sacraments is certainly a moving experience for me, not just for the individuals themselves, but really for the entire church. One of my favorite parts of the Easter Vigil is conferring those sacraments of initiation and welcoming the new members into our Catholic faith.
We've unfortunately run out of time. But if you'd like to hear the rest of this episode, you can listen to us anytime on Spotify under Candid Catholic Convos, or you can download this episode from our website at hbgdiocese.org. Thank you so much for listening. Our goal at the Diocese of Harrisburg is to walk with you on your faith journey. So if this episode resonated with you in any way, the easiest way to show your appreciation is by sharing this program with your network, or by leaving a review on your listening platform. You can also support us financially by making a donation online at hbgdiocese.org/DAC and clicking the Make a Donation button. Thanks again, and we'll see you at church on Sunday.